Chapter 25. Town and Todgers. Surely there never was, in any other borough, city, or hamlet in the world, such a singular sort of a place as Todgers. And surely London, to judge from that part of it which hemmed Todgers round and hustled it, and crushed it, and stuck its brick and mortar elbows into it, and kept the air from it, and stood perpetually between it and the light, was worthy of Todgers, and qualified to be on terms of close relationship and alliance with hundreds and thousands of the odd family to which Todgers belonged. You couldn't walk about Todgers' neighborhood, as you could in any other neighborhood. You groped your way for an hour through lanes and byways, and courtyards, and passages, and you never once emerged upon anything that might be reasonably called a street. A kind of resigned distraction came over the stranger as he trod those devious mazes, and, giving himself up for lost, went in and out and round about and quietly turned back again, when he came to a dead wall, or was stopped by an iron railing, and felt that the means of escape might possibly present themselves in their own good time, but that to anticipate them was hopeless. Instances were known of people who, being asked to dine at Todgers, had travelled round and round for a weary time, with its very chimney pots in view, and finding it, at last, impossible of attainment, had gone home again with a gentle melancholy on their spirits, tranquil and uncomplaining. Nobody had ever found Todgers on a verbal direction, though given within a few minutes' walk of it. Cautious emigrants from Scotland or the north of England had been known to reach it safely, by impressing a charity boy, town bred, and bringing him along with them, or by clinging tenaciously to the postman, but these were rare exceptions, and only went to prove the rule, that Todgers was in a labyrinth, whereof the mystery was known, but to a chosen few. Several fruit brokers had their marts near Todgers, and one of the first impressions wrought upon the stranger's senses was of oranges, of damaged oranges with blue and green bruises on them, festering in boxes, or mouldering away in cellars. All day long, a stream of porters from the wharves beside the river, each bearing on his back a bursting chest of oranges, poured slowly through the narrow passages, while underneath the archway by the public house, the nuts of those who rested and regaled within, were piled from morning until night. Strange solitary pumps were found near Todgers, hiding themselves for the most part in blind alleys, and keeping company with fire ladders. There were churches also by dozens, with many a ghostly little churchyard, all overgrown with such straggling vegetation as springs up spontaneously from damp, and graves, and rubbish. In some of these dingy resting places which bore much the same analogy to green churchyards, as the pots of earth for mignonette and wallflower in the windows overlooking them did to rustic gardens, there were trees, tall trees, still putting forth their leaves in each succeeding year, with such a languishing remembrance of their kind, so one might fancy, looking on their sickly boughs, as birds in cages have of theirs. Here, paralyzed old watchmen guarded the bodies of the dead at night, year after year, until at last they joined that solemn brotherhood, and, saving that they slept below the ground a sounder sleep than even they had ever known above it, and were shut up in another kind of box, their condition can hardly be said to have undergone any material change when they, in turn, were watched themselves. Among the narrow thoroughfares at hand, there lingered, here and there, an ancient doorway of carved oak, from which, of old, the sounds of revelry and feasting often came. But now these mansions, only used for storehouses, were dark and dull, and, being filled with wool, and cotton, and the like such heavy merchandise as stifles sound, and stops the throat of echo, had an air of palpable deadness about them which, added to their silence and desertion, made them very grim. In like manner, there were gloomy courtyards in these parts, into which few, but belated wayfarers ever strayed, and where vast bags and packs of goods, upward or downward bound, were forever dangling between heaven and earth from lofty cranes. There were more trucks near Todgers than you would suppose whole city could ever need. Not active trucks, but a vagabond race, forever lounging in the narrow lanes before their master's doors and stopping up the pass, so that when a stray hackney coach or lumbering wagon came that way, they were the cause of such an uproar as enlivened the whole neighborhood, and made the bells in the next church tower vibrate again. In the throats and maws of dark no thoroughfares near Todgers, individual wine merchants and wholesale dealers in grocery ware had perfect little towns of their own, and, deep among the foundations of these buildings, the ground was undermined and burrowed out into stables, where cart horses, troubled by rats, might be heard on a quiet Sunday rattling their halters, as disturbed spirits in tales of haunted houses are said to clank their chains. To tell of half the queer old taverns that had a drowsy and secret existence near Todgers would fill a goodly book, while a second volume no less capacious might be devoted to an account of the quaint old guests who frequented their dimly lighted parlors. These were, in general, ancient inhabitants of that region, born and bred there from boyhood, who had long since become wheezy and asthmatical, and short of breath, except in the article of storytelling, in which respect they were still marvelously long-winded. These gentry were much opposed to steam, and all newfangled ways, and held ballooning to be sinful, and deplored the degeneracy of the times, which that particular member of each little club who kept the keys of the nearest church, professionally, always attributed to the prevalence of dissent and irreligion, though the major part of the company inclined to the belief that virtue went out with hair powder, and that old England's greatness had decayed amain with barbers. As to Todgers itself, speaking of it only as a house in that neighborhood, and making no reference to its merits as a commercial boarding establishment, it was worthy to stand where it did. There was one staircase window in it, at the side of the house, on the ground floor, which tradition said had not been opened for 100 years at least, and which, abutting on an always dirty lane, was so begrimed and coated with a century's mud, that no one pane of glass could possibly fall out, though all were cracked and broken 20 times. But the grand mystery of Todgers was the cellarage, approachable only by a little back door and a rusty grating, which cellarage within the memory of man had had no connection with the house, but had always been the freehold property of somebody else, and was reported to be full of wealth, though in what shape, whether in silver, brass, or gold, or butts of wine, or casks of gunpowder, was matter of profound uncertainty, and supreme indifference to Todgers and all its inmates. The top of the house was worthy of notice. There was a sort of terrace on the roof, with posts and fragments of rotten lines, once intended to dry clothes upon, and there were 2 or 3 tea chests out there, full of earth, with forgotten plants in them, like old walking sticks. Whoever climbed to this observatory was stunned at first from having knocked his head against the little door in coming out, and after that, was for the moment choked from having looked perforce straight down the kitchen chimney. But these 2 stages over, there were things to gaze at from the top of Todgers, well worth your seeing to. For first and foremost, if the day were bright, you observed upon the housetops, stretching far away, a long dark path, the shadow of the monument, and turning round, the tall original was close beside you, with every hair erect upon his golden head, as if the doings of the city frightened him. Then there were steeples, towers, belfries, shining vanes, and masts of ships, a very forest, gables, housetops, garret windows, wilderness upon wilderness, smoke and noise enough for all the world at once. After the first glance, there were slight features in the midst of this crowd of objects, which sprung out from the mass without any reason, as it were, and took hold of the attention whether the spectator would or no. Thus, the revolving chimney pots on one great stack of buildings seemed to be turning gravely to each other every now and then, and whispering the result of their separate observation of what was going on below. Others, of a crook-backed shape, appeared to be maliciously holding themselves askew, that they might shut the prospect out and baffle Todgers. The man who was mending a pendant and upper window over the way became of paramount importance in the scene, and made a blank in it, ridiculously disproportionate in its extent, when he retired. The gambols of a piece of cloth upon the dyer's pole had far more interest for the moment than all the changing motion of the crowd. Yet even while the looker-on felt angry with himself for this, and wondered how it was, the tumult swelled into a roar, the hosts of objects seemed to thicken, and expand a hundredfold, and after gazing round him, quite scared, he turned into Todgers again, much more rapidly than he came out, and 10 to 1 he told M. Todgers afterwards that, if he hadn't done so, he would certainly have come into the street by the shortest cut, that is to say, head foremost. So said the two Miss Pecksniffs, when they retired with Mrs. Todgers from this place of espial, leaving the youthful porter to close the door, and follow them downstairs, who, being of a playful temperament, and contemplating with a delight peculiar to his sex and time of life, any chance of dashing himself into small fragments, lingered behind to walk upon the parapet. It being the second day of their stay in London, the Miss Pecksniffs and Mrs. Todgers were by this time highly confidential, insomuch that the last-named lady had already communicated the particulars of 3 early disappointments of a tender nature, and had furthermore possessed her young friends with a general summary of the life, conduct, and character of Mr. Todgers, who, it seemed, had cut his matrimonial career rather short, by unlawfully running away from his happiness, and establishing himself in foreign countries as a bachelor. Your pa was once a little particular in his attentions, my dears, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers, but to be your ma was too much happiness denied me. You'd hardly know who this was done for, perhaps? Apostrophe, she called their attention to an oval miniature, like a little blister, which was tacked up over the kettle holder, and in which there was a dreamy shadowing forth of her own visage. It's a speaking likeness. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the two Miss Pecksniffs. It was considered so once, apostrophe, said Mrs. Todgers, warming herself in a gentlemanly manner at the fire, but I hardly thought you would have known it, my loves. Apostrophe, they would have known it anywhere. If they could have met with it in the street, or seen it in a shop window, they would have cried good gracious. Mrs. Todgers, apostrophe, presiding over an establishment like this, makes sad havoc with the features. My dear Miss Pecksniffs, apostrophe, said Mrs. Todgers. The gravy alone is enough to add 20 years to one's age, I do assure you. Apostrophe, lore. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the two Miss Pecksniffs. The anxiety of that one item, my dears, apostrophe, said Mrs. Todgers, keeps the mind continually upon the stretch. There is no such passion in human nature as the passion for gravy among commercial gentlemen. It's nothing to say a joint won't yield, a whole animal wouldn't yield the amount of gravy they expect each day at dinner. And what I have undergone in consequence, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Todgers, raising her eyes and shaking her head, no one would believe. Apostrophe, apostrophe, just like Mr. Pinch, Mary. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Charity. We have always noticed it in him, you remember? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, my dear, apostrophe, giggled Mary, but we have never given it him, you know. Apostrophe, you, my dears, having to deal with your pa's pupils who can't help themselves, are able to take your own way, apostrophe, said Mrs. Todgers, but in a commercial establishment, where any gentleman may say any Saturday evening, Mrs. Todgers, this day week we part, in consequence of the cheese, it is not so easy to preserve a pleasant understanding. Your pa was kind enough, apostrophe, added the good lady, to invite me to take a ride with you today, and I think he mentioned that you were going to call upon Miss Pinch. Any relation to the gentleman you were speaking of just now, Miss Pecksniff? Apostrophe, apostrophe, for goodness sake, Mrs. Todgers, apostrophe, interposed the lively Mary, don't call him a gentleman. My dear Cherry, Pinch a gentleman. The idea. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what a wicked girl you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Todgers, embracing her with great affection. You are quite a quiz, I do declare. My dear Miss Pecksniff, what a happiness your sister's spirits must be to your pond self. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he's the most hideous, goggle-eyed creature, Mrs. Todgers, in existence, apostrophe, resumed Mary. Quite an ogre. The ugliest, awkwardest, frightfulest being you can imagine. This is his sister, so I leave you to suppose what she is. I shall be obliged to laugh outright, I know I shall. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the charming girl, I never shall be able to keep my countenance. The notion of a Miss Pinch presuming to exist at all is sufficient to kill one, but to see her, oh my stars! Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Todgers laughed immensely at the dear love's humor, and declared she was quite afraid of her, that she was. She was so very severe. Who is severe? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried a voice at the door. There is no such thing as severity in our family, I hope. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and then Mr. Pecksniff peeped smilingly into the room, and said, May I come in, Mrs. Todgers? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Todgers almost screamed, for the little door of communication between that room and the inner one being wide open, there was a full disclosure of the sofa bedstead in all its monstrous impropriety. But she had the presence of mind to close this portal in the twinkling of an eye, and having done so, said, though not without confusion, Oh yes, Mr. Pecksniff, you can come in, if you please. Apostrophe, how are we today, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, jocosely. And what are our plans? Are we ready to go and see Tom Pinch's sister? Ha, ha, ha. Poor Thomas Pinch. Apostrophe, apostrophe, are we ready, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Todgers, nodding her head with mysterious intelligence, to send a favorable reply to Mr. Jenkins' round robin? That's the first question. Mr. Pecksniff. Apostrophe, why Mr. Jenkins Robin, my dear madam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mr. Pecksniff, putting one arm round Mercy, and the other round Mrs. Todgers, whom he seemed, in the abstraction of the moment, to mistake for Charity. Why Mr. Jenkins? Apostrophe, apostrophe, because he began to get it up, and indeed always takes the lead in the house, apostrophe, said Mrs. Todgers. Playfully. That's why, sir. Apostrophe, Jenkins is a man of superior talents, apostrophe, observed Mr. Pecksniff. I have conceived a great regard for Jenkins. I take Jenkins' desire to pay polite attention to my daughters as an additional proof of the friendly feeling of Jenkins, Mrs. Todgers. Apostrophe, well now, apostrophe, returned that lady, having said so much, you must say the rest, Mr. Pecksniff, so tell the dear young ladies all about it. Apostrophe, with these words she gently eluded Mr. Pecksniff's grasp, and took Miss Charity into her own embrace, though whether she was impelled to this proceeding solely by the irrepressible affection she had conceived for that young lady, or whether it had any reference to a lowering, not to say distinctly spiteful expression which had been visible in her face for some moments, has never been exactly ascertained. Be this as it may, Mr. Pecksniff went on to inform his daughters of the purport and history of the round robin aforesaid, which was in brief, that the commercial gentleman who helped to make up the sum and substance of that noun of multitude signifying many, called Todgers, desired the honor of their presence at the general table, so long as they remained in the house, and besought that they would grace the board at dinner time next day, the same being Sunday. He further said, that Mrs. Todgers being a consenting party to this invitation, he was willing, for his part, to accept. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.